Hello, everyone. This is the EDH Reccast, but we're doing a slightly different spin on it. This isn't just the EDH Reccast. We're now in what we are calling the EDH Rec Room. The usual show takes a lot of post-production work, and sometimes we want to get things out just a smidge faster, especially if something is happening out there in the magic world. So this is just a slight variation on the podcast where we're going to be discussing some interesting topics a little bit more, maybe casually, possibly a bit more abstractly. And in this particular show, what we wanted to talk about are the companions. I am, of course, joined by Matt and Dana. You won't see us on camera for these, but we will make sure that on the YouTubes there are still card images so that you can follow along online. But really, there's just so much happening in the Ikoria set that we wanted to do this particular segment as a separate show. And since the topic is also a little controversial, we figured it was perfect for a different style of discussion. So that's why we have here the Rec Room. Matt, Dana, how you guys doing today?
Doing wonderful today.
Yeah, doing pretty good.
Awesome stuff. We are talking about the companions from Ikoria, Lair of Behemoths. There are 10 of them within hybrid colors that can be outside of the deck as an extra commander. I don't know. We're a little bit behind on actually getting to this discussion, but we didn't want to be even further behind in actually putting them into the podcast proper. So I guess just upfront to really start this discussion. Again, everything's a bit more casual. No formal introduction, stuff like this. What are you guys' actual impressions about companions, just so we can get this conversational ball rolling?
Well, first, I think we need to explain what companion is for people aren't in the loop.
This is what happens when I take the structure away from the podcast. My apologies.
this is why you're so organized, and this is why Dane and I don't make show notes. But yeah, so companion basically is an ability that the rules text on it on every card says, if this card is your chosen companion, you may cast it once from outside the game. So essentially, it's kind of a pseudo sideboard card when it comes to commander. Even though there aren't any sideboards in Commander. So it's kind of an outside the game zone where, you know, we have the command zone that we're used to. The companion zone basically is if the companion clause on every specific card is met, then you put it in a separate zone called the companion zone where you can actually cast it just once per game out of the companion zone. And then from the rest of the time on forward, it's just treated as a normal card. It'll go to the graveyard or get exiled. You can't recast it if it is exiled. You can only cast it from the companion zone just once.
Indeed. Now, what happens if it gets shuffled, if your graveyard gets shuffled back into your library while the companion card is in that graveyard?
Then it just goes back into the library. It's treated just like a regular creature card from there. So the companion basically is a command zone that only functions once.
Now, I knew that. I just wanted to give you a chance to explain it to our listeners.
Sure. And these do have a very significant deck building restriction. And also, this is the thing that I did not know initially when the rules for these came out. First of all, I didn't know that they would be allowed in Commander. But second of all, I didn't realize that they would count your Commander within their restrictions. So if they do have a restriction like, oh, you can only include cards in your deck that have an activated ability, or you can only include cards in your deck with an even converted mana cost, then that does include your Commander within those restrictions for this to be allowed to be your companion. So that's an important thing there. Are you guys giving this a thumbs up, a thumbs down? Before we actually take a look at any of these, what are your thoughts about this as a concept in EDH?
I think I would like it a little better if I didn't feel the implementation was kind of kludgy. Mm-hmm. I think having this card that exists in your sideboard in one format and in this nether space of the companion zone-ish in another is not terribly elegant. I think they probably could have just had it exist in the command zone, since that exists in other formats as well, and let you play it from there. And maybe I would like it better if that was the case. I just feel like the implementation is kind of inelegant, and that just kind of sets me off wrong. You know, it kind of is like this, it's like biting down on a piece of metal. It gives me just an uncomfortable kind of feeling in my spine.
Even just thinking about it. Yeah.
Yeah. But beyond that, like if I can get past the fact that it feels poorly implemented, I'm perfectly fine with trying different weird things like this.
Matt?
So I'm not a fan of Companion. I think that some of the clauses are too easy, and I think some of them are too hard. And I understand why they did it. They kind of wanted to infuse a little bit of the spirit of Commander into 60-card formats. That's kind of what the general response from WotC has been. The only problem is when they try to add a Commander-esque mechanic to 60-card formats, I don't think with Companion they really weighed how that would impact Commander itself. And as we can see, two cards already you can't play because of either right. the clauses or whatever. So I'm not a fan overall of Companion. It's another zone you have to worry about. It's going to be too easy for some decks to play a Companion, and other decks it's going to be near impossible. So it's unfair. It's unbalanced, I think. I think that was probably the most...
I'm completely here with you. This is one of the mechanics that actually has me the most frustrated with Ikoria, which is saying something, because Mutate is difficult for my brain and keyword counters are so fiddly that it really frustrates me.
Yeah.
It really feels like a set that is just like, hey, we could do stuff on Arena, but it is a lot harder to do in paper. And I know that R&D tests in paper, but this still feels like we're going really far into the stuff that other card games seem to do and have probably implemented a little bit better. Like Mutate, for example, reminds me a lot of Pokemon. And I feel like Pokemon probably did a little bit better. And Companion, I like Sam Black's article on this one, where he said that it was the worst mechanic for the health of Magic since Phyrexian mana. And my problem for Companion is not within Commander. My problem is really that, like, I don't know, the Yo Dog, we heard you liked EDH, so we put EDH into the non-EDH formats approach, I find is a little bit stressful. I don't like what this will do to 60-card formats, especially the older ones. This is just kind of weird. But also, like, this is the tiniest sliver of design space out of any mechanic that I've ever seen WotC attempt to do, because there are so few things that you can even do with this type. Like, because the deck building restrictions have to be like properly restrictive to make this an actual cost, but they also have to be restrictive enough that it is immediately obvious to your opponent if any card in your deck has broken that rule. So there really are only like 10 possible designs that they can even make using this mechanic, which is kind of what led to, you know, one of them needing to be immediately banned right out the gate, Lutri the Spell Chaser. As soon as it was announced, we knew that it was banned because unique cards is one of the only deck building restrictions that you can even think of. But I haven't even gotten to my other problem with it, is that I think this, Dana, just like you said, this is confusing to tell new players that outside the game cards don't work, but that these do. I get why it's less interesting to have a sideboard stuff that lets, for example, your Karn Planeswalker go and find your Mycosynth Lattice from outside the game, because that opens things up rather than a Companion, which does definitionally restrict, and restrictions can be really fun. But that distinction is still really confusing to teach new players. And as someone who likes to teach new players a game, having one mental hurdle after another with stuff like this in the set, it just feels a little bit weird to put Commander into other formats and to also have a strange rules break distinction thing here in this one. I just, the implementation, see, just like you said, Dana, is very shaky.
The rules break isn't, as far as like cards from outside the deck and the game kind of breaking a rules for Commander, that one I think is a little easier to explain. It's basically, you can explain it as, it's a second Commander you can only cast once, basically. There are ways I think that we can not justify it, but explain it to newer players, but just it, the fact that for people who are established who know, okay, well, this is an outside the game card that becomes in the game and it battles with kind of a wish board type of concept, I think it's a bigger problem for established players like us to wrap our heads around, because we know all the rules that don't exist with Karn, for example, where you can wish for outside the game cards. But for newer players, if you can just keep it as it's just a second Commander you only cast once as long as it meets these conditions, I think that's a little easier to do. My biggest issue with the Companion clauses, though, is in 60-card formats where it was designed, how are you supposed to prove you are satisfying this if a card doesn't come up? Like, it, especially for tournament Magic, Companion, I think, becomes such a headache for judges. And then for players, like, it puts a lot of trust and people who are trying to game the system.
I'm not bothered by that, because again, like, these restrictions, they have to be so restrictive that it is immediately obvious if something is broken. That, like, and also, like, when we present a 100-card deck that we allege is singleton, we're not going through everyone's library to verify, oh, you don't have two copies of a Soul Ring or something like that. It becomes obvious as soon as someone casts the second Soul Ring that they've broken the restriction. I think that there are easily folks that might miss if a card accidentally does not follow the restriction of their Companion. I think that is more likely than people trying to take advantage of it. So that is, like, certainly an awkward bit there. But these are so restrictive right. that it will become immediately obvious if one of them is broken. Like, if you draw an odd converted mana cost card in your deck that has the companion with only even contributing mana costs, like, what are you going to do? Cast that spell? Like, your opponent will immediately know that that's not going to work, and that will be, like, that's not going to fly. So I'm not worried about that front. I am more worried about, I mean, if anything, I'm more worried about the fact that this creates too much similitude within games. And that's what makes me so worried about it for other formats, especially something like Vintage or Legacy. You don't want similitude in within game to game. You don't want everything to play out exactly the same way. That's one of the things that makes a card game like this so much fun. So that it also kind of bugs me. Like, that's the reason that Magic isn't Duel Masters, for example. Duel Masters had the ability to never be mana screwed. Hearthstone also has that ability, but that means that the games tend to have exactly the same style of pacing, and that is something that makes them appreciably different from Magic in a way that makes me appreciate Magic even more, because that variance can cause so many wild swings within a game, and that matters to me a whole lot. And the thing that bugs me about companions is that they eat away a little bit at that. But we've just been talking abstractly about the companions. Maybe we should actually talk about the companions themselves, since we just sort of talked in circles around them. We address the first one, Lutri the Spell Chaser, the 3-mana 3/2 Elemental Otter, which was my nickname in college. It is a companion that says each non-land card in your starting deck has a different name, so the same thing as Commander, basically. It has Flash, and when it enters the battlefield, you cast it, you copy target instant or sorcery spell you control, you may choose new targets for the copy. We all agree that this is banned. We know that we are behind on this news, getting to it, but this needs to be banned, because there is no reason not to play it. Are you guys sad about this? Do you wish that they had changed it so that you could play it? I don't know where yet.
Every deck running red and blue getting a free dual caster mage sitting there in the command zone, essentially, to cast once a game, it seems ridiculous. So it had to be banned. And I guess people were upset that they couldn't play it. That otter, I don't necessarily get that. It's an otter, whatever. But people were mad about that. So I, you know, to each their own.
Yeah, the emotional the emotional response of being sad about playing, not being able to play the otter, like, I get it, but the rational response is what Dana said. Like, if you take away the creature type and the art from this and just look at it as a card, it is absolutely busted. It needs to be banned, because it essentially is a free card, and it's going to, I could see it warping some decks. Like, if you're only playing, you know, Simic, but you have been kind of tinkering around with playing, you know, teamer colors and adding red, for example, you can do that, and this becomes free and it rewards you for adding the extra color or doing it to a gruel deck and et cetera. So yes, it's going to warp the format. It's good it's banned. I'm sorry that the otter was banned before you got to play with it, but there are other otters in this set that you can play with.
Well, and if it was going to get banned, that was exactly the correct time for it to happen, right out the gate, so that people don't invest in it. And yeah, exactly. But we're all on board with this one. This one needs to, because it doesn't have a restriction. It is literally free. And that type of thing is not the kind of thing that you want infiltrating EDH. So the bans do not always need to be about the power level, but really about, like, what they cause to impact the format in different ways. And this is one of the things that we would not like seeing. All right, so moving on then, there is actually another pseudo-banned companion. Although you can play it in the command zone, which is where I want to play it. This one's Urion Sky Nomad. So this is 3, and then Azorius Hybrid, 5 mana total for a bird serpent. It's a 4/5. The companion clause is that your starting deck contains at least 20 cards more than the minimum deck size. So that literally cannot happen in Commander, because you can't play a 120-card deck. But as a actual card, it is pretty cool, because it has flying, and when it enters the battlefield, you exile any number of other non-land permanents you own and control, and then you return those cards to the battlefield at the beginning of the next end step. I don't know about you guys, but I love this one.
It's Brago, but on ETB instead of on attack, I guess. It's fine. It's going to look like every Brago deck, and maybe we need a different variant on Brago. I don't think it's that exciting, but if that's your jam, it gives you another way to do it.
Oh, this is my jam.
Yeah, I'm with you, Dana. I'm sure your co-host at CMDR Central, Max, will love this card, because it's just going to be another thing
he'll put it in his Brago deck.
Yeah,
for
he'll
sure.
put it in the Brago deck. Flicker decks. I mean, there's so many different flickering decks and different commanders, but a majority of the 99 kind of plays out the same. And I think this is going to be fine. Having it not being able to be played as your companion, I mean, this seems like a very, very powerful effect to kind of have for free as an extra card. So I'm fine with it not also being a companion eligible thing for Commander.
I see. I actually might build this one, because I love sure. it as a commander, because you can combine it with effects like Flicker Wisp or Restoration Angel to just repeatedly bounce the stuff on your board, and people basically just can't interact with your stuff ever again because you were so repeatedly flickering things every turn. And the end step rider here instead of the immediate thing means that it's a little bit more difficult to go infinite. I mean, there's always infinite blink stuff that people can pull off with, like a Deadeye Navigator Palancron combination, but this isn't an inherent combo right out of the command zone if you don't want it to be. And the thing that I also appreciate about it is that a deck like Brago or like Rune, they can blink things once per turn, once per round. Like Brago can do it with his attack, Rune can do it with the tap ability, and you can untap him, but it still takes a couple of extra hoops to get there. The thing that's nice with Yorion is that you actually can, if you engineer this using a Restoration Angel to flicker this and then stuff comes back and then that happens every turn, every round, you can build up a lot more ETB triggers that way than the other two blink, the famous blink commanders. And that's what I like about it. Like if you're blinking a Battle Sphere every turn in a round, or if you're blinking like an Urza every turn in a round, that builds up a lot faster, and I think can build to a very respectably lethal board state instead of just being a total drag like the non-combo Brago decks sometimes risk falling into. So I'm totally here for it.
It also stacks with Brago, and mm-hmm. Brago stacks with it, so like you can run Brago in your Yorion deck and run Yorion in your Brago deck and have those things work independent of one another, which is kind of nice too.
But now we actually want to talk about the ones as companions, and I kind of vaguely ordered these by what I think that they'll show up in popularity. Heads up, there will be a section on EDHREC for the companion page to see when decks are being built with companions. It is still a little bit in process at the time that we're currently recording this. What do you guys think of Giganta the Wellspring?
So Giganta the Wellspring is the elemental elk for 5 mana. It's 4 and gruel. And basically, you can tap it to add Wooburg to your mana pool, and that mana can't be used to pay generic mana costs. The companion clause here is no card in your starting deck may have more than one of the same mana cost, same mana symbol in its mana cost. So you can't, you know, run a True Conviction with triple white or something with, you know, trip blue or something in it. It has to be no more than one of each mana symbol. What do I think of it? I think if you are playing a 5-color deck and you can meet those requirements, which seem much easier than it winds up being much easier on paper than it sounds like it would be, I think you run it. It's a really nice, basically, mana dork that sits there, castable once a game, that makes you every color you need.
Yeah, this one's really easy. Like when we look through 5-color commanders, we see so few duplicate mana costs on the page for Golos or Niv-Mizzet Reborn, stuff like that. I mean, some commanders like Jota, they do like Omniscience, which has too many blue symbols to meet this, or some tribal decks really enjoy playing stuff like Lurking Predators or Kindred Discovery or something like that. And this card is like hardcore useless in Morophon. but this is really easy. It will not shock me to see many 5-color decks running this one, because it is almost trivial as an actual deck building cost, given that so many 5-color decks are just already meeting this requirement, sometimes by accident.
Now, my question becomes, does this count hybrid mana in the mana cost? So if you have like a hybrid Gruul and a hybrid Izzet, for example, I don't know any cards that do that, but would that count as 2 red and you can't play this as your commander?
Rules
stumped
in
him. Stumped him. Got
rules
it.
In Ikoria are so confusing that
They don't matter. Yeah, this is very hard.
I would guess they don't count, given the fact that when we're looking at things like what was the demon that cares about different CMCs, but it cares about the mana symbols,
right?
In the case of that one, hybrid things don't count as being one of the same. So I would guess, at least based on that precedent, a hybrid Gruul doesn't count as a red or a green.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And Dana, I think you pulled up a little bit of things here. Like the slivers, for example, are really popular 5-colors. And there are a ton, 109 legal slivers, it looks like. And only 3 of them have double mana.
Yeah, and of those two, one is Plague Sliver, which is literally the one you would never run because right. It makes all your slivers worse. The other two are Pulmonic and Telekinetic Sliver, which I've never seen anyone cast either of those two in any of the hundreds of games I've played against sliver decks. So, you know, obviously there's, like you mentioned, Lurking Predators or things like that that might have double symbols, but you know, if you're playing 5-color slivers, none of your sliver creatures at least are contributing to the double mana cost.
Well, if you're playing 5-color slivers, you also probably don't need any more help.
Maybe not, right. But I looked at my I've got a 5-color Kenrith deck, and granted it's, you know, somewhat restricted because it's an exalted deck, so I'm probably running less things than the average person by running a 5-color deck. But just going through that deck right now, I only had 5 cards with duplicate mana symbols in the entire deck. And they were all things that were relatively easy to replace. You know, Austere Command being a good card, but like I can very easily turn that into a Merciless Eviction if I wanted to.
Right.
I could turn the Great Henge, as good as it is. Like I could just run a Mana Rock or run a Lifecrafter's Bestiary or something. It's relatively easy, even if your deck is not, you know, getting there. And having 94 of the cards already qualify, makes those are some pretty minimal changes to have to make.
Yeah.
So
the next companion that we think will be the most popular is Kahira the Orphan Guard, 3-mana, 3/2 cat beast that says all the creatures in your starting deck need to be cats, elementals, nightmares, dinosaurs, or beasts. It has vigilance, and it gives your other creatures of those types +1 and vigilance while it's in play. This goes into Arabo decks. I don't know what else to tell you.
Yeah, the Arabo gets a free 101st card. Like that,
Literally, that's free.
A no-brainer. And it's Lutri quality of just free card, but it's only for Arabo, so I understand why Kahira is a little more limited. It won't be as popular, but even then, like all of these different creature types, the fact that it's the creature cards is what you care about. So you can have cards that make other creature types as long as it's not a creature card. Mm-hmm. So I think this is going to be a very, very powerful commander, especially for, you know, your Dinosaur Tribal, which is going to get another boost with this set coming out. And I mean, it's just, it gives vigilance, which I think is one of the more underrated mechanics for commander, because it's very good to let you be offensive and defensive. It's a pretty good card. And I'm sure there are going to be quite a few beast decks that play this too. So yeah.
I mean, yeah, you have to look at the eligible commanders for it. I don't know that you even play this as a commander because it's so easy to just do a Rabo Cat Tribal or something like that. Mm-hmm. It can go into a Gishath deck, I suppose, because of the dinosaurs, but Gishath really relies upon a lot of humans to actually supplement what the dinosaurs are doing. Maybe if you're playing something like a Zakama deck where it doesn't have any other creatures aside from the Zakama, then this could be an extra free card too if you want. But really, this is straight up for Arabo. It's an absolute, just complete certain there. The next most popular that we're predicting is going to be Obosh the Prey Piercer. Matt, you want to tell us about that one?
So Obosh the Prey Piercer is 3/2 Rakdos-colored hybrid mana, so black and a red, for a 3/5 Hellion Horror. So the companion clause is your starting deck contains only cards with odd converted mana costs and land cards. And then if a source you control would with an odd converted mana cost would deal damage to a permanent or player, it deals double that damage to the permanent or player instead. So this one seems pretty easy to kind of maneuver around, just because everything, if you only have to have odd converted mana costs, you pretty much know right away if a card can fit or not. It's not tied to any theme. It's not tied to any card type. So to me, this probably is going to be one of the easier ones to address as well.
Yeah, I mean, there are plenty of commanders that this can be interesting with. Like, this makes Korvold even more powerful than it is. Most likely, I would suspect that Graven Predator Captain becomes the most popular commander for this as a companion. But plenty of commanders that this could fit the bill for are just kind of like, yeah, I don't think so. Like, Andra Falconwrath or Lord Windgrace or something probably just don't really need it. Zergo maybe might be kind of interesting, but you are sacrificing a lot when you can't play boots in a lot of these decks. So I have a Graven deck, but I do not want to sacrifice those things. Like 2-mana mana rocks are matter a lot to me.
So a lot of these feel like the epic spell series from Kamigawa. And for those that don't know, because that was a long time ago and there's only 5 of the cards, epic was a keyword in the Kamigawa block, Saviors of Kamigawa actually. On 5 different spells, 1 in each color, that said, for the rest of the game, you can't play spells, and at the beginning of each upkeep, copy this spell, except for its epic ability. So you'd cast a spell, we'll use Enduring Ideal, for example, that says, search your library for an enchantment card, and put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. So it kind of does an Academy Rector thing. But then you can't cast spells, except for every turn that Enduring Ideal then goes off again. So they're really powerful effects. The problem was the downside was so huge, they just don't see much play at all in really any format.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're specifically like trying to do some kind of a, you know, weird corner case thing that you've decided you're going to force. a lot of these really feel that way. And I think Obosh is the first one that we're talking about here that kind of falls into that. Yes, you could make your deck run entirely things with odd converted mana costs. Is it worth it to have a one-time damage doubler that people can see coming and that's going to cost you 5 mana to bring into play in addition to whatever you have going? Like, you're not going to run it as a, okay, I'm going to play this and then I'm going to cast a, you know, giant earthquake. The amount of mana that's going to take is really, really prohibitive. People will see it coming. So I feel like this is the point where we get at where the epic clause is kind of in effect, where like the hoops you have to jump through aren't worth what it does as a companion.
See, I don't mind it actually, because I think you can stack this with a bunch of Punisher effects like Painful Quandary and Zozu the Punisher, and then drop this towards the end of the game after you've kind of set up, and then it's just going to clean house. Like, the fact that they're going to take tan damage or discard a card just to answer this, like, it, I think this is something that you set up for, and I don't think the restrictions on this one are too terrible. Yes, there are some decks that suffer, but there's others that...
Matt, Painful Quandary is life loss, though. Zozu, I think that's a 3-mana card, but like so many of the Punisher effects, like Mana Barbs, are even converted mana costs. So even within that idea, like the Punisher style is missing out on a lot of staples to try and run this thing. I do think that folks will enjoy being able to build around this one, but you are sacrificing a lot with this, and that's why I'm still just not entirely sure. Also, this is a little bit stupid with Heartless Hidetsugu, because that's going to deal lethal to everyone, I guess. Not as horrible to build around, but you are making some significant sacrifices here. Up next, we're going to talk about Karuga the Macro Sage, 5-mana, 5/4 in Simic colors, Dinosaur Hippo. The companion clause is that your deck contains only cards with a converted mana cost 3 or greater, and of course land cards. And when it enters the battlefield, you draw a card for each other permanent you control with converted mana cost 3 or greater. So, what do you guys think about skipping your first 2 turns in order to use this as your companion?
I am excited to play against any deck that wants to run as a companion. I am pumped to have you give up every good removal spell, every good counter spell, every good ramp spell, every good small draw spell.
Cyclonic Rift, Boots.
Absolutely. I hope that you give that all up so you can have a really good draw spell on turn 7. Go for it.
There are a lot of commanders that can abuse this pretty well, though. Like Rune, for example, would be very, very happy to see this and can use a lot of 3-mana creatures to help supplement the removal and the ramp and the draw that you might be missing from some of those. But man, not playing Cyclonic Rift is a pretty big thing. Not playing Boots feels bad. Not playing Sol Ring, like, what?
Yeah, I mean, again, like all the removal spells you're going to give up, you know, your Path to Exile and Rune, you're giving up Return to Dust, or not Return to Dust, Swords to Plowshares. There's so much stuff you have to give up. I just don't think it's worth it for that. I mean, Rune even is maybe the best case, because then you can blink it and get returned, you know, repeated effects out of it. But even then, I'm not buying the fact that it's going to be mathematically worth it.
Yeah, I think that that's also the thing that you really have to organize these companions around. It's not just that you want a card that is free. You want that card to synergize with something else that your deck is doing, which is why I think that Ruin is going to be the most popular one for Karuga to show up in. It still has a cost, but Ruin can really take advantage of that ability. So that could make that cost worth it compared to some of the other ones that we have. Man, up next is basically the opposite of Karuga. This one's Lurrus of the Dream Den, the 3-mana, 3/2 Cat Nightmare. The restriction is that each permanent card in your starting deck has a converted mana cost of 2 or less as lifelink, and during each of your turns, you may cast one permanent spell with converted mana cost 2 or less from your graveyard. Oh my goodness, I don't like this card. Not in the context of Commander. There's only like 2 commanders that can even play this. That's Aile and Karlov, because you have to have the converted mana cost of 2 restriction on your commander as well. But this one scares me for Legacy and Vintage.
Yeah, I could absolutely see this causing a ton of problems in older formats for sure. Well, one thing I will point out here, though, Joey mentioned there's only 2 commanders that can play it right now, which is Aile and Karlov. One of the things we've seen floated in the past as a, you know, rule change people have kind of debated wanting to have put in place to have the hybrid mana rule change, which would allow this to be ran in a deck that just runs white or black, not one that runs both. And at that point, it becomes legal in 27 different decks.
I mean, great. I don't know.
I don't mean that in a good way. I'm just like pointing out, like, when people talk about how little the hybrid mana changes, that radically changes this card.
I think the best use for this one is probably actually as a rat calling deck or something. Not as a companion, though. I just can't see an Eilie or Karlov deck really wanting to make that restriction worth it. But as a rat calling deck, it could be kind of interesting. If you are using it as a companion, another instinct might be to use Shadowborn Apostles, but don't do that because they need big mana cost demons. This is better as a commander, but I'm still kind of like, eh. And really, I'm scared of what it will do to older formats. This is the one that makes me really, like, I don't know. This feels like it will have a Lutri problem, but for other people. And that's kind of why I'm just like, why did they make this mechanic? All right. Up next, we've got Garuda.
Garuda, Doom of the Depths, is 4 and Dimir, 6 mana for a 6/6. The companion clause here, your starting deck contains only cards with an even converted mana cost. And when Garuda enters the battlefield, each player puts the top 4 cards of their library into their graveyard. Put a creature card with an even converted mana cost from among those cards onto the battlefield under your control. And this is also a Demon Kraken, which may be relevant in some decks.
Yeah. I mean, my first thought when I saw this was maybe playing it in like a Lazav Dumir Mastermind deck, but I mean, he just likes consuming Aberration and Psychic Corrosion and wheel effects too much. Or maybe Marchesa, but she really enjoys Unspeakable Symbol. Like, it kind of... Like, these are real restrictions if you're going to try and use these as companions. And I think that in some cases, the commander's almost signature cards are the type of thing that you would have to be sacrificing to get companion effects like this. So I'm not sure that I'm really into it.
It also kind of hurts as one of the 99, the fact that it has black, because most people that are like doing big sea monster decks, those decks tend to not be running black. So even as part of the 99, it kind of winds up being off color for people just for flavor reasons who are building that sea creature beatdown deck.
Yeah. You could also maybe blink and reanimate it a little bit, but like,
yeah,
the decks that care about that have better effects than this. So I don't see it working as a companion in the 99 or as a commander. We're like we said before, we were sort of organizing them by popularity, and this one I think is going to be near the lowest. But hey, Matt, what do you think of Umori? Because this is my pick for the lowest companion.
So Umori is 2 in Hybrid Golgari for a 4/5 Legendary Ooze. And the companion clause on this one is each non-land card in your starting deck shares a card type. And then as Umori enters the battlefield, you choose a card type, probably the one that you're picking with companion. And then spells you cast of the chosen type cost 1 generic mana less to cast.
I mean, I don't want to do an oops all creatures build in Golgari. That sounds like it'd be sacrificing far, far too much value to do this. And as a commander, too, I'm also just kind of like not really here for it. If you wanted to try doing something like, inevitably, this is going to be just all creatures unless you choose commanders that are multiple types, like a Reaper King. You could try and do an all artifacts deck, or Windgrace for an all planeswalkers deck, or Farika for an all enchantments deck. But all of those sound not great. Funny, like, for the deck building restriction to see if you can do it, but still not really worth it.
Well, and not only is that restriction really, really challenging, the upside isn't even something like a Karuga where you just draw a grip full of cards.
Mm-hmm.
This just winds up being a, you know, decent mana rock. Not even that great of a mana rock. Like, it winds up being it's oftentimes going to be a worse Gilded Lotus.
Yeah, it's like you get a Foundry Inspector. Cool. not really here for it. This one is going to be my pick for the least popular companion and maybe card of all of the ones we've talked so far. Although maybe the next one that we're talking about, we save this one for last because this one's special. This one might be the least popular in terms of companion, but as a commander, it's pretty darn cool. Matt, do you want to tell us about this one?
So Zerta the Dawn Waker is 2 Hybrid Boros, so red to white mana for a legendary elemental fox that is a 3/3. The companion clause is each permanent in your starting deck has an activated ability, but then abilities you activate that aren't mana abilities cost 2 generic mana less to activate. This effect can't reduce the mana that would cost 2 less than 1 mana, and you can pay 1 and tap it to have target creature can't block this turn.
So Boros goes infinite now. Get a Basalt Monolith and go crazy.
And it's right there for you to cast whenever you need to. You don't even need to find the other piece for it. It's there as your companion, if you can do that.
I don't know if you can. There are a lot of commanders that have activated abilities.
but I don't think you would want to. Again, I think this is much better as your commander than it would be as a companion. I think the trade-offs are too huge.
Yeah.
As a commander, though, that's really, really interesting.
As a commander, it's very interesting. As a companion, like, I don't know, you could put it into Breya, but, I mean, Breya likes a lot of her rewards for artifacts that don't necessarily have activated abilities. You could put it into Zakama, but Zakama really likes the mana doubling enchantments, which don't have activated abilities. You could put it into Akeem, for example, a new Jeskai commander, because that's got an activated ability, but like then you'd lose out on all of the other good synergies with tokens. Like, again, the cost on this one is really, really, really big. Maybe Kaikar, I guess, but even then, I feel like Kaikar has some permanence that you want. Like, you lose Smothering Tithe to play this as your companion, and that's a really big cost, too. But as an actual commander, yeah, this thing's really cool. I love that they are willing to do... They pushed Boros a little bit. This is great with equipment. This is great with cycling. This is great with Eldrazi Displacer. I just am a little frustrated. I'm not sure if the set review episode will be out by this time. It most likely will be coming out after, just given the way that things are recording. But I'm frustrated that they gave Boros something cool that can go infinite with a Basalt Monolith or what have you. And then they did the exact same thing for Keenan Bonder Prodigy, where they're just like, oh, and also Simic can do it too. And it also has, a direct outlet to let you win the game. So I'm just frustrated that they gave Boros something and then were like, oh, but also Simic too. Like, you didn't need to let Simic do this too. Like, come on.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much exactly how I feel.
So those were our takes on that. I think that the Firefox is going to end up being one of the more popular ones just because it does something a little bit different for Boros. I think Gigantha will show up in tons of the five-color decks. Kahira, obviously, slam it into your Arabo decks. Do you guys have any other final thoughts on companions, if you think that the rules should be changed on them, for example, or ones that you might try? Is there anything that we didn't quite get on before we actually close things out?
I think it's a mechanic that requires a lot of work to design, I would guess, and to balance. And it's a mechanic that's going to require a lot of messing around on the player's ends to try to make work or figure out. And I don't know if it's worth what they had to do to get us these 10 cards that I don't think are going to see that much play. Or the when they do see play, we'll just see play as commanders and just ignoring the mechanic anyway.
Yeah.
I think there was maybe a lot of effort that went into this that's not going to probably see much payoff. But, I don't have a thought beyond that, I guess.
The companion mechanic itself, I think, is fine in principle, but then just the execution and then some of the payoffs, I'm not really sure, as we've kind of talked about for all of them, is it really worth it to address and build around? And I think it's a no, or kind of around the board.
Yeah, I'm not even sure if the execution is my problem with it, because I think they did find some of the stuff that you really do need to make these actually restrictive and also immediately obvious to your opponent if the companion rule is broken. But I don't like the concept. That's my real problem. I think that this is such a thin sliver of design space that it was really kind of dangerous to move into. I don't like putting EDH into other formats. I think that that's one of the things that makes EDH unique. So this is kind of a weird and slightly frustrating thing to see. I'm not sure if this juice was worth the squeeze, as they say. At the time that this episode is coming out, I believe that Charlotte, when she was on our stream, CAG member, she teased that there might be an announcement coming out around the 20th or so for... an update from the rules committee, possibly. I think she maybe hinted at a rules change, but I'm not actually sure. And just sort of to close things out, I wanted to ask you guys what you thought might be happening. That discussion might be occurring at the time that this exact episode airs, in fact. So maybe if we can predict what we think might be happening, it might make us sound like real smart or something. Just if you guys had an idea, do you think that they might be announcing that they will change the way that companions work, or is there some other rules change that you think might happen, or one that you want to see? Just to sort of round out this more casual episode, I guess.
It feels too soon to make a companion rule change. I don't know what the rule change would be anyway. Maybe they would have them exist in the command zone, but that doesn't seem like the kind of thing they would need to make a special announcement for. I don't know. Or they could just ban them as companions, but that seems like the kind of thing they wouldn't want to do, or definitely not do this soon either. So if I were to speculate, I feel like if there was just going to be a rule change in general, I feel like the one that would most likely happen would be to move to a unified commander damage rule of some sort, where instead of tracking individual commander damage, you just start tracking total commander damage. So if I were to guess on a rule change, it would be that one.
Matt, any guesses from you?
If I had to tinfoil hat, I do think that unified commander damage would be a nice addition. I think it doesn't really hurt anything, but it does help some decks that maybe get pushed out. So if there was one rule change that I would support the most, I do agree unified commander damage probably be one at the top of my wish list.
Interesting. For me, it's commander dies. I find that one also very confusing to tell new players, that like your blood artist isn't going to trigger if the commander goes away. That's just kind of like, I look at my commander Rayhan, Last of the Obzon, for example, and that says if your commander, if one of your creatures dies or goes to the command zone, and I'm like, this is really awkward wording. I don't want to see that on a bunch of commanders going forward. It makes it difficult for them to design cards like Alenda in standard formats, which I know that they really want to. That's going to be my guess for it. I don't know if there's any way to make an elegant rules change about that, how it would be worded. But that's been my hope for a while now, I guess. So we will see what it actually is when the announcement comes out, if there is even a change. We're not entirely sure. That'd be kind of interesting to see. Or maybe they will change the way the companions work. We just wanted to talk about companions for folks here because we didn't get to them on the actual set reviews. They took up a lot of time. There's so much happening in Ikoria that we wanted to give these their due time. Listeners, we would really like to hear what you think about companions, which ones that you think would make the most interesting companions, the most interesting in the 99, and the most interesting in the command zone as well. Like, I am actually really digging Yorion, for example, so it would be really cool to see what people do with these, even if they aren't necessarily used for the actual companion stuff, or if they are, what people can come up with. It'll be interesting to see. And, of course, don't forget that EDHREC will be having a companion section on the website, so that you can see what folks are doing with these and which ones end up rising to the top in terms of popularity. That is still underway, but it will be coming out. Thanks so much for joining us here in the EDH Rec Room. Guys, remind folks where they can find you.
So you can find me on the Twitters at Mathimus55. That's MathimusFifty-Five.
You can find me on the Twitterbirds at Dana Roach and hear me on my other podcast, CMDR Central.
And I'm Joey Schultz. You can find me at Joseph M. Schultz on Twitter, and you can find the cast at EDH Retcast on Twitter. And hey, who knows? The next episode might be us talking about whatever change may or may not have happened.
Just remember, whatever happens in the rec room stays in the rec room.